All right, welcome back. The majority leader of the City County Council is here, wearing some gear from the NCAA champion. Anyway, Majority Leader Vernon Brown is here, joined by City County Councilors at Large, Zach Adamson and John Barth. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
So here we are with a $30 million hole in public safety. About half of it is costs incurred by the Marion County Sheriff. Half are costs incurred by the Department of Public Safety, which includes fire and police and a little bit of animal control and other stuff put in. We've got a $41 million blessing, which actually isn't a blessing. It's money we were shortchanged for last year, and money they were getting ready to shortchange us for 2012. The mayor says he wants to take that $41 million check, put it in the bank, make a little interest, and use it for next year's deficit, which he now is suddenly talking about a $70 million deficit, and he really didn't talk about it last year during the campaign. From your perspective, from the majority's perspective, let me start with the majority leader. What do you think should be done with this $41 million that should have already been accredited in our budget?
Okay, there's a couple of things. The deficit for public safety, we're not quite sure what exactly it is right now. The numbers keep fluctuating. We know for sure that the sheriff has a responsibility to take care of house inmates and care for their medical needs, and that bill comes from health and hospitals. So we're working on that to try to work that bill down. The IMPD and IFD's deficit, initially Dr. Straub estimated it being $10, $15 million, but the last conversation we had with him, at least thinks he can work that down to $1 or $2 million with some cost-cutting savings. So that's the idea.
Wait a minute. He said it was 12 to 15. Now he thinks he can work it down to one.
One or two or three, so close. You know, so we're still.
Should John Gregg be giving him that book, Accounting for Dummies?
We're still working on those numbers. You know, and then the actual money that we got from 2011 to 2012 that was owed to us by the state is $49 million, not $41.
Zach Adamson, you're a businessman. You deal with books every day. With the businessman in you, do you understand this finance?
Well, I think Hope, our CFO for the council, described this the money shrinking and growing as the abracadabra moment. Just all of a sudden, it went from 15 down to one. It's quite mysterious. There really isn't any explanation on how we got there. So we're in the process of trying to figure this out.
Is it correct that there was something in the Indianapolis Star the other day after the Capital Improvement Board, you know, started showing their figures that said that when Director Straub appeared before a couple of the council committees, he said that the public safety cost for the Super Bowl was in the low $2 million range, $2.1 to $2.5 million. And then mysteriously, right after the CIB had their meeting on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, he mysteriously sends a bill to the Capital Improvement Board mysteriously for $3.9 million CIB had budgeted for. I've done budgets, Zach Adamson, you've done budgets where, let me make sure this invoice adds up to the amount
to
we
the
budgeted
allotments.
For.
Yeah, to the allotment. Amount that they've set aside, yeah. Sometimes you want to fluff up those numbers a little bit to make sure you're getting all that they've set aside for that. So
is that something that you all are really going to want? I asked Ann Lathrop live on this program 2 days ago, were they going to really look at, you know, at the invoices? And she kind of, you know, said, yeah, we want to really look at the invoices. Is that something the council wants to do, John Barth, is really look at? Are these $3.9 million expenses legit?
I think across the board what we're seeing is from the public safety department a fair amount of capricious activity as far as what their budget is. I think you said it well. It seems one day it's this, and then abracadabra, the next day it's that, depending on the circumstance and the situation. And you can't budget that way. You certainly can't let the people of the city see their money fluctuating wildly from day to day depending on the situation.
As the legislative body of the city, can you all unilaterally ask for a state board of accounts audit, or does that authority reside in the executive, in the mayor?
Not quite sure, Amos. I think we could ask for one. And I believe that Hope said somebody's going to come in. I think the state board of accounts is going to come in and do an audit sometime soon. I think that's the direction we're heading in. I don't think the mayor is going to ask for one. We can't do an independent audit for a private company because it costs us money and we don't have any money. So the only chance is for an oversight is have the State Board of Accounts come in, and I think that that discussion is ongoing right now.
One of the things with Wishart that I couldn't understand is if a normal person goes into Wishart and does not have the funds, they're not on Medicare or Medicaid, Wishart still legally has to treat that individual, and if Wishart can't collect the money or they give it to a finance company to collect, they can't collect it, eventually it will get written off.
So they absorb those costs.
They absorb those costs. That's part of their mission. So this cost for the sheriff or Wishart to take care of people who are prisoners or injured in a police situation, you know, why can't that just be part of Wishart's cost of doing business, John Barr?
Low-income healthcare happens to be my business, so this is a issue that I'm particularly interested in, familiar with. And the thing I think, number one, people need to know is that the General Assembly a few sessions ago set the amount that sheriff's departments should charge in the public hospitals should charge in the public safety agencies should pay, and that's Medicare plus four. Mm-hmm. That's set in statute at the state.
That's
level.
Medicare plus 4%.
Medicare plus four. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that's something that's been addressed by the General Assembly to make these hospitals whole, who have this significant responsibility across our state, and that's to take care of not only low-income and indigent folks, but also prisoners.
So this cost that that is in the sheriff's budget to go to Wishart, this is a state mandate?
The cost that is associated with public safety agencies sending their inmates to public hospitals is Medicare plus four, yep.
I think it's also important to recognize that the statute doesn't say that this is the sheriff's obligation. This does not say that the health provider shall bill the sheriff. It mm-hmm. says they shall bill the county.
Uh-huh.
And that's different than the sheriff. And so when we're talking about the sheriff's budget shortfall for something that should be billed to the county, this is a different ball of wax entirely.
So but is it reasonable to assume that the intent of the legislature was, since every county by constitutional fiat, constitutional, must have a police force, some law enforcement force, that if this is a, you know, something that law enforcement said you need to go to the hospital, that it was reasonable when the legislature did this that it should be the county sheriff? And it just so happens the mayor thinks he's in charge of law enforcement and all functions except the sheriff.
The incarcerating entity has the constitutional responsibility for ensuring that inmate health care is delivered. The big issue here really is arrestee health care and mm-hmm. how that's who pays for that and how it's allocated and where the service is delivered. As it stands, there's a lot of opportunities, and Sheriff Layton has been innovative in his thinking in that he can deliver those services at the arrestee processing center and in the jail, and folks don't necessarily have to go to Wishart for services that are low impact and could easily be addressed by a nurse.
Vastly cheaper.
239-1310 It's Afternoon's Name. We're talking about your money. We're talking about your council. Maybe there's an issue you want to bring before members of the council. Zach Adamson and John Barth are among the four at-large members of the council. They represent all, they just updated the population, 911,000 estimated new population in Indianapolis and Marion County. Vernon Brown is the majority leader. Vernon Brown, there we have this new deputy mayor of education who the executive is paying $5,000 less than the public safety director, Dr. Frank Straub, paying $23,000 more than the chief of staff of the mayor and the two other deputy mayors. And traditionally, because you've been on the council a number of years, those are the three highest paid members of the executive of the city. The mayor's salary is fixed at $95,000, but the deputy mayors and chief of staff always made a few dollars more than the mayor. That has been the tradition. Are you disturbed at someone who lived in Indianapolis, has maybe an 8 or 9 year employment record, only a bachelor's degree, getting that much of a differential over the two deputy mayors we already have and the chief of staff, all of whom have more work experience, more educational experience than the deputy mayor for education?
Now, pay is a concern. I'm totally in favor of a deputy mayor of education. I don't think this person is the right person. I'm glad the mayor listened to the Democrats during the election cycle, and that was mm-hmm. one of our priorities, and he finally took some of our advice. That's the only thing he's taken our advice on so far mm-hmm. since he's been mayor. So the concept is good. This is the right person. I tried doing a committee hearing to find out how the selection process went, who else applied, things like that. I have yet to receive that information. So this person is a young person who has no experience with the educational system here, not a vast amount of experience with the educational system here, probably couldn't name you all the superintendents or all the school districts here at this particular point in his career. So to pay a person that amount of money with that lack of knowledge, I think we may be moving in the wrong direction.
Zach Adamson and John Barth, when Frank Straub was hired, the fact that he had, I think, about 20-plus years work experience in law enforcement, master's degree, doctorate. Granted, he lived on one of the coasts, and you acknowledge there you're paying a premium if you're encouraging someone from the coasts to move here. But this level of salary increase for someone with a relatively thin resume, are either of you concerned about that?
Well, I think that we have to look at a broad spectrum of qualifications here. There is educational, there's the degrees that you may have, but there's also a track record. Mm-hmm. You have your job history, right. What kind of accomplishments you've done in the community. I'm not seeing that either. And mm-hmm. So that's kind of the issue for me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to be at the committee hearing where they talked directly to him, but right. I have actually heard good things about this this appointment. But I really can't justify making those kind of expenses with that little to base it on.
John Barr?
Well, I think in the time of austerity we're facing, when the administration is acknowledging that next year we have a $50 to $70 million budget deficit, and that they're potentially asking the officers on the street to make significant sacrifices owing to the budget across the board, folks should be willing to take less pay, as a lot of people are in our community, and I think that probably should be reflected at the top.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me go to Larry. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Councilman. You know, I was really proud to see them in that meeting with the people that talk about the TIF districts.
Mm.
I was really proud of the questioning and interrogation that they did on them, because why? We have here north of south down here. That is the biggest waste of money. And what they're doing down at Fountain Square in that whole corridor is they're building new venues, and that's just going to drain the old ones and make a slum down in Fountain Square. That's kind of where I live. So I'm seeing that happen right now. But in any case, I just think that the mayor needs to be taught a lesson. He won't do anything because he's got his de facto officers in place. They're doing anything they can until somebody questions their authority. On this thing with the ambulance, I've heard other cities where they have a separated sheriff and a metro police force. The policy of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is now to take anybody with a skint knee to the hospital, because they know that's going to put Sheriff Layton out of business. And
right.
Mayor Ballard's trying to do his get back, and there's no way you're going to do it unless you play hardball with him. You got the purse strings. I would not appropriate one dime for ambulance deal. And if he didn't like it, hey, tell him to go pound sand.
Wait a minute. Are you Zach Adamson? You kind of nodded orally when Larry said, "Are some folks just randomly taking people to the hospital to run up a bill?"
Well, I think there's a definite suspicion there that, and this is across the board, not just with the sheriff's budget, but also with the other Democratic elected officials, such as the clerk and the auditor and the assessor's budgets have all been shrunk, making it very difficult for them to do their jobs, which makes it difficult for them to produce. And this is just, I believe, one more of those examples, working with the sheriff and talking to him, finding out exactly what he's been experiencing there. I'm led to believe that what he's saying is exactly true, that rather than take them to the processing center where they can be assessed on whether or not they do in fact need to go to the hospital or the emergency room, they take them immediately to the emergency room.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a break. We've been joined by the president of the City County Council. She's just a hardworking person. It's afternoon's with Ames. The president is here. The majority leader is here. And two councilors at large. Your Democratic majority in the council. Your opportunity to bring up the issues important to you. We'll, when we come back, we will, speaking of polling places and budgets, we'll bring up, we'll find out from the council president, you know, some of the concerns she has. We'll also ask the majority leader about these polling place changes. That there's an estimate that's been put out that 3 out of every 11 voters in Marion County has had their polling places changed. That is an outrageously unconscionable, overly high percentage, which raises the question, do they have maps in the mayor's office? Do they are these people from Hamilton County trying to determine where polling places ought to be, and they don't know the neighborhoods, they don't know what's going on? And is this an extra fiscal impact? Are they going to be paying polling places more than they normally would pay? And that comes not out of the mayor's budget, that comes out of the county clerk's budget. Is there some skullduggery going on around here? Anyway, it's Afternoons with Amos after these. Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. We're joined by the president of City County Council, Maggie Lewis. Madam President, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Next Tuesday is the long-awaited, everybody's been waiting for, the State of the City Address by Mayor Greg Ballard. What do you hope the mayor talks about next Tuesday?
I hope that he is presenting in a spirit of compromise and wanting to build a relationship with the members of the City County Council. Thus far, I feel like there's still a disconnect. I feel like the members on both sides, well, the Democrat caucus specifically, has reached out to the administration and is starting to build relationship. But overall, I think we need to work closer together.
I understand that one of the Republican members of the council, Councilor Jack Sandlin, has told some media that maybe it's time to take a hard look at the merger between police and sheriff, that maybe that has helped to precipitate the budget crisis in public safety. Have you heard, Madam President, any concerns from any of the members on either side of the aisle about, is this time to relook at the merger?
I've heard that rumor. I've heard from a couple media outlets that that's being discussed at this time. But I'm not sure if we're at that point where we really need to go back and undo this.
In terms of the ratification of mayoral appointments, where is that process in terms of the council? I know there was a very long hearing by the Public Safety Committee in terms of the renomination of Dr. Frank Straub. Where do all these nominations stand?
I believe we have several on the agenda for this Monday that we will vote on, the entire council will vote on. We do still have Dr. Straub that's out there. There's a meeting, I believe, that's scheduled in a couple weeks, and one of my colleagues can jump in, and we'll continue that conversation with Dr. Straub.
So it's anticipated that the council on Monday will vote on the bulk of the mayor's nominations for reappointment, but that Dr. Straub's nomination is kind of – he's hanging out there.
It's not that he's hanging out there, but we want to really take a look at the budget issues that that IMPD and the Sheriff's Department is faced with, and have that conversation and put that appointment aside until we get to the bottom of this.
The only other time that I've heard of in the modern history of the City County Council where it seemed that a majority of councilors did not favor the appointment of a major department head was back in the Goldsmith administration. Mm-hmm. I think Mayor Goldsmith at that point counted the votes and pulled that nomination.
Correct.
There is some confusion as to the state law that governs the City County Council, that governs the mayor. He has the right to appoint his major department heads. The council has the right to advise and consent. That's not the term, but to approve.
Confirm.
But there seems to be confusion over if the council were to vote no, what happens?
Yes. And so our council believes that it doesn't mean if we do a vote of no confidence that Dr. Straub specifically would be able to stay until the mayor decides to remove him from that position. There hasn't been a case that spoke specifically to this, and so we really don't have anything to go back and look to say, yes, he can stay, or no, he has to go immediately. But our council believes that he does not get to stay till the mayor decides to remove him from that position.
After the next hearing that involves Dr. Straub, is this going to be when his name finally comes before the full council? And maybe it's not fair to ask the council president that, because she's the president of all 29 of you, but to ask those of you that are here, is this the kind of vote that should be a conscience vote, not a vote of party, but a vote of how each member of the council feels, given that there are strong feelings in this city and county about Dr. Frank Straub on all sides of the political spectrum, and I think of on all sides of town.
Yes, Amos, we haven't taken a caucus position on Dr. Straub, and also Lori Miser from DPW. We delayed her confirmation vote in Public Works because she's brand new, and we want to give counselors an opportunity to call her up and contact her, have a private meeting to discuss their district concerns with her prior to taking her to the council for a vote.
So Dr. Straub is not the only one that would not have a vote on Monday.
That's correct.
Okay.
So we're still working through those issues. As far as Dr. Straub's concerned and some of the problems that were talked about earlier, we've been having ongoing meetings with Dr. Straub, with Sheriff Layton and some other county officials to work through the budgetary process and also the problems with delivering services, as Zach brought up, IMPD taking people to the hospital. That's a departmental policy that Dr. Straub can change. The fuel policy for IMPD police officers and reimbursement for the cars, that the sheriff is the leading person taking the lead on that. Mm-hmm. Those are some things we're trying to work through those issues. So counselors in my caucus will be allowed to vote their conscience on Dr. Straub based on his works and based on product that he produces. If he fails to produce any product that my counselors feel comfortable with, then they don't have to vote. They won't vote for him.
On Zach Adamson and John Barth, this new police procedure that police officers really are upset about, and that is this zone patrolling, which means where crime is hottest, a whole lot of officers will show up, which means where crime is lowest right then, there won't be a lot of police officers. Have you heard from people, not only in your individual neighborhoods, but from people throughout the city and county of concerns with this? Either they like this idea, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, or they're going, wait a minute, they didn't even do that on Law and Order SVU.
No, I have. During the campaign, I went to a lot of neighborhood associations, and I have continued to do that since I've been elected. And more than once, this exact issue has come up. In particular, one neighborhood around 38th Street has been pinging back and forth on their listserv, expressing a lot of concern about it, expressly worried about the lack of interaction with their beat police and the fact that they know them well and the police know them well. There's a lot of anxiety about that. And I think there needs to be a lot more communication from the police department as to how it's going to work, or from Director Straub.
Is that
one of the things that we talked a lot about during the campaign? This is the whack-a-mole policy. Remember, we talked about there's a hot spot then, and they send all the police over to one area. And that leaves a lot of other areas a little more vulnerable than I think is a good idea. In our community where I live, we're a neighborhood in transition. You know, we came from a place where there was a lot of crime, there was a lot of street violence, there was a lot of street activity, we'll just say a lot of activity. Right. And we worked with the police, we got our neighbors together, and we finally found ourselves at a place where we're starting to transition. And so we may not be very high on that priority list or that place where they may station police officers, so they may send them out into another area. Well, that leaves those neighborhoods that are sort of balanced on the edge of a knife in a very vulnerable state without that presence there. And that puts us at risk of falling back into that same pattern that we just got ourselves out of.
The fact that every week, except this week, because mysteriously the weekly crime reports have not yet been published for the week ending April the 5th. I wonder why. But every time we've seen them, crime has gone up. For the first quarter of the year, crime was up. The gut is, well, it was warm in the first quarter, so that's why it's up. To which I say, well, it's getting ready, except for this week, it's getting ready to be warm the rest of the year. Does that make you guys nervous that we're seeing crime up overall about 13 to 15% city county wide through the first 3 months of the year?
Yeah, it makes me extremely nervous, and I think there's a fair amount of looking that has to be done at the manpower that we have and the IMPD out there now, having trouble maintaining the numbers we're supposed to be at, some questionable activity regarding trying to count folks who don't typically go into that count as being in that count. And if we have the manpower to even meet the need on the street, I think is an important issue. It has to be part of the discussion with in public safety next week.
239-1310. Back to the phones. And Elsie, hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I would like to ask a question. Hold on just a minute.
Wait a minute
we're
now.
Okay.
Okay, what's the question?
38th and Sherman, all the way back to 42nd and Sherman. I live in a senior citizen apartment. Could you tell me how we can get that done?
What are you trying to get, a sidewalk?
Yes, we're trying to get sidewalks. We want to walk. We can't walk because we don't have any sidewalks.
So,
and I'm a senior citizen.
So wait a minute. All that money we got for selling the water company, and they didn't spend any of that rebuild Indy money in your neighborhood?
Not that I know of.
Oh, maybe Mayor Ballard's waiting to make that announcement Tuesday at the State of the City speech, Majority Leader Vern Brown.
Yeah, I chair DPW, and we just received a list of projected projects for 2012 for all council districts. And you can check with your counselor and see sidewalks for that area may be on there. I know they did some projects last year on 34th Street, and that was Council Oliver's district. They put in sidewalks on 34th Street from Sherman to Emerson, and they repaved some streets. So they do have some schedule for some new sidewalks, which historically in the city they haven't done new sidewalks because of the hundreds of miles of sidewalks they have to maintain. But with this new money, they're supposed to be putting in some sidewalks in some areas that they haven't done it before. So maybe that may be one of the areas.
So now, Elsie, you're talking Sherman Drive?
Yeah, from north of 38th Street all the way back to 42nd and Sherman.
So you're saying at least to 42nd on Sherman?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, see, I know there's a new charter school that's going in up around there.
Oh, yeah, right across the street.
So it would seem to me that Marcus Tinley and the folks with the new charter school, he would at least want a sidewalk in front of his school. So I tell you what, your city county council, let me see how good I am with I still own the old districts. I don't know the new ones yet. Miss Scales.
Correct. Christina Scales.
Christine Scales.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you call 327-4242, they will give you the contact information for Councilwoman Scales.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Republican, but she's good people.
Okay.
She really cares about her district and the neighborhood she serves. So you give Sister Scales a call. You give that office a call, and they'll give you her contact information, how to get a hold of her.
Okay. Her name is someone asked you another question.
Yes,
I hear our mayor, he's always on the Tom Brown show. What's the problem? He can't come on your show.
Probably the same reason he has not given an interview to the Indianapolis Recorder in maybe not a year, but 8 or 9 months. He has not talked to the Indianapolis Recorder, and mm-hmm. he won't come on primetime radio.
Oh, okay.
Maybe he's too busy changing polling places. Maybe that's the problem. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-13. No, you didn't break it. It's cool. 239-1310. 239-1310. That's after news. Davis back to the phones and Kareem. Hi there.
Yeah. How you doing?
Fine.
How you doing, the panel?
Hello.
Hi.
Good.
Okay. Listen. It's usually controversy. I want to know when the council is going to take a serious stand on this mayor and Bennett that deal with the state on education. My man Mitch on his $325 million and $200 million that they convenient lost. I want to know when y'all gonna take a stand by putting them teachers back to work, reopening them schools that was closed based upon that money, and literally looking at some serious charges of RICO Act and dismantling the IPS system. Now the other thing, Amos, is they taking them tests, or them tests is coming up for the third graders.
Test is over with, and the school.
Okay, so how many are third graders they deem that they got to build prisons for?
We don't know yet.
Our
understanding is that they have sent the scores to the individual schools. The state says they will not tell the results of the iRead third grade test until May. We will be out at Wayne Township tomorrow, and I've already told Wayne Township that I'm going to ask that question, how well they did. And I can't understand why the state, since they've given the schools the information, why the state can't release the information this month. In other words, once parents are told what their kids did, we don't need to wait till May for the results. We need to know the results now. You're absolutely right.
Okay, so what are we going to do about this mayor in education and re-getting people back in school?
All right, that's a good point, and Councilman John Barth, Kareem raises education. We now have a deputy mayor, and again, because the Ballard administration will not permit the deputy mayor of education to come to the community where 60% of the students that are in the mayor's charter schools are African American, they won't permit this deputy mayor to come and talk to the community. Do we need to be concerned we have a deputy mayor that is only over things that touch a small minority of the people in this county? I mean, the deputy mayor for neighborhoods affects everyone. The deputy mayor for economic development affects everyone. The chief of staff affects everyone. Right now, as I understand this deputy mayor for education, he would only touch a minority of the 911 residents of Marion County.
I mean, I personally think that anyone who serves in the deputy mayor position, regardless of their job, needs to be completely focused on being out in the community and serving everyone and engaging with the entire city. You're right, he's got a small scope because that's what the mayor actually can control. But one of the big advantages of being the mayor, working for the mayor, is that you have a convening authority and you have the ability to bring people together. So part of his challenge and his job is to get out there to IPS and to the township schools and bring people together and really sell what his vision is, and not only to school leaders but to the whole city.
So using the third grade test as an example, because this is the first time a test has been done where there will be a significant consequence to the students that can't pass that test. You know, in I-STEP, you could not pass, but there really wasn't a hard consequence against a kid. If you're at the high school level with those competency tests, you get like 3 years to be able to pass it. So the consequence takes a while. With this test, you don't pass it, you're not moving to fourth grade. Nobody really knows what the impact of that is going to be. But let's just say for the sake of the argument, it's a negative impact in Marion County schools. You talk about a convening authority. Would that be the proper role of a deputy mayor for education to have a convening authority say, hey, what's going on? Or if there's a disparate impact for that deputy mayor to be a leader in finding out what's going on?
I absolutely do. I think when you're looking at disparities in particular across the board and you're trying to say, hey, in this part of the city or in this city in general, we're not doing as well as we should do on reading. What can we do to bring all the resources of the city together via that convening authority to focus on improving everyone? Your point being he has only real authority over their charter schools. You're right. But he can bring folks together to focus on an important issue in the city.
Let me go to Lula at 239-1310. Hi there. Lula?
Yes.
You're on the air. What's up?
I want to know who's responsible for this city water. I mean, you know, we can't even, the water's not even fit to drink.
Wait a minute, you got water that's not fit to drink?
Yes, it tastes like chlorine bleach. It's been like that since the football game downtown.
Well, the mayor sold your water company to the gas company.
You know, when are they going to fix it? Are they going to fix it?
Well, you need to call Citizens Water. Have you called them?
I called them.
And what did they say?
They said they was working on it. They was putting chlorine in it, and it's still in it. You know, we're paying water bills, and we still got to buy drinking water.
Well, the only people you can complain to about the water company is the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission.
Okay.
There is, if you call 211, the helpline,
mm-hmm.
They'll give you the number.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counselor, y'all still getting complaints about the water ain't fit to drink and all that kind of stuff, even though the city has nothing to do with it?
Counselor Adams and I were down at a public meeting in Decatur Township the other day. We had a pretty robust set of complaints from some folks who were not satisfied with what they were getting.
And a lot of the things that they're dealing with too is the city dump is out there, the landfill is out
right
there, and they have very serious concerns about the seepage out of that into
from the
water
dumpster into the river.
Right. Well, and not just into that, into the water table for the city.
Speaking of Decatur Township, that is an area where a business has offered to come in, build a parking lot so that people can park and ride and get a ride to the airport. He has not asked the city for any economic development money, any tax abatement money, or anything. The Metropolitan Development Commission said this was okay, but the city and the airport are trying to put this guy out of business, and I hear that's a hot issue down in Decatur Township.
It's a very hot issue.
And it's bipartisan.
It is bipartisan. There were, I think, three Republican city councilors that went to testify on behalf of approving this measure. There were two Democrats that showed up to support this measure. And the bottom line is that Decatur Township has a disproportionately low number of people paying into property taxes, which are should be evenly spread out among everybody. But because such a large portion of it is the airport, they don't have that benefit. And so when a small business decides that they want to locate into a township to help alleviate that tax burden, we should be doing everything, especially since they're not asking for any tax abatements. They're not asking for any kind of corporate assistance from the city at all. And they're going to help that tax base, help alleviate some of the tax burden on those residents. We should be doing everything that we can to encourage those kind of things. And the worst part about it is that the airport is a government agency, mm-hmm. and they should not be using what I would consider their publicly funded muscle to try and muzzle out a small business that is going to be contributing to the tax base.
Is this a minority that owns this business?
I believe I saw either the owner or one of the spokesmen, and he did look like he was Latino, but I didn't see anything about that.
And Majority Leader Vernon Brown, if a Democratic mayor and a Democratic administration tried to sue a private business not to be in business because it was competing with a city agency, there would be a huge hue and cry from Republicans and business-oriented people. Is this something the Democratic caucus should be concerned as to why the city would be going after a business who is – they're not asking government for anything but the opportunity to do business and pay taxes in Indianapolis?
That's right. What I know about the project, it's a good project. The mayor controls the airport board or airport authority, airport municipal corporation. And the mayor controls that. The effort to get the business up and running and located out there was a bipartisan effort between Democrat and Republican councilors who understand the need to secure some more a larger tax base in Decatur Township.
The other thing is the parking meters that the administration sold for 50 years and all the money would be spent at different, you know, in Broad Ripple and downtown. They're building – no, I'm not bringing up the parking meters, but there's this garage in Broad Ripple – where they keep changing the original design, and now they want the garage not to meet flood standard provisions, which are federally mandated provisions, and the garage keeps changing, and it looks like this is the worst project ever coming up. Zach?
This is the most recent of a string of variances that this garage has applied for. And you have to remember that $6.3 million of city money is already invested in this project. And what I've explained is when I was a kid.
But this is the project where we're paying the bill, the taxpayers, but we won't own
no
the building.
No ownership of this at all. This
is wait a minute. We're paying and we don't own the building.
We're paying or not. We don't own it. And.
It's like your water.
Like the water.
So when I was a kid, my grandparents set my aunts and uncles down. They grew up in the Depression. So they wanted to make sure that my parents and aunts and uncles, who grew up much better, had money that they could spend on their kids, didn't given to their whims too easily or too often because they were afraid they'd get spoiled. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't respect the things that they got. They'd manhandle them and misuse them. And this just reminds me so much of that they've received so much of our money that they aren't really concerned with what risk they're putting this at. With $6.3 million of our money going into it, they're risking the flood insurance premiums for people in Marion County across the board, and they risk actually losing flood insurance certification for the city because of the continual variances that they've given out. There are so many risks, and this isn't a floodplain, and that's the bottom line.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Anthony's name. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with the leadership of the Indianapolis City County Council. It's After News with Amos after these. Back to the phones quickly, and James, hi there.
Hey, I want to ask a quick question.
Yep.
Okay, this man is not a career politician. He popped out of nowhere. How is it that he just come in and run everybody and there's no demand of what's going on? It's obvious what's going on. The taxpayers getting ripped over the city of the project that this man is doing. We cannot afford these mistakes are going on that we're going to have to pay for after he's gone up out of there in a couple more years. So what are we doing now? I mean, I hear a lot of talking. And another thing, do he ever talk to the Democrats at all? I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you, Mike.
I appreciate it, Council President. I know who the mayor, you and the mayor have had discussions. Has he talked to other councilors?
No, not since December.
No, I've not heard from him.
Okay. And then part of what you're doing with the chief financial officer for the council majority and some of these other things and being deliberate in the confirmations of the public safety director and now what we're hearing, the public works director is starting to put that accountability on the mayor?
Yes, and asking the questions. One thing that we did immediately was to hire a CFO full-time for the council so that we can have someone that dedicates their time to looking at the budget, look at how we are spending our dollars. And so we are doing our part. We're trying to be proactive, looking at the budget, preparing for next year's budget. And so we are doing our part in asking those questions and starting to hold them accountable.
Is it fair to say that in these first 3 months, most of the ordinances that have come before the council have passed by wide bipartisan majorities?
Exactly. You know, we have not stalled business. Business in this city has not stopped because we have split government. We are doing our part. The mayor has gotten things passed that he's wanted. And so we are doing our part, but we do have to ask those tough questions. One thing that we haven't been able to receive at this point are monthly financial reports from the controller. And so in order for us to do our job, we have to have updated and on-time information.
239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go to Brenda right quick. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine. Fine. Go ahead.
Brother Kareem was right on the money when he talked about the grading system for these third graders in building prisons. So my question is, has there been any data collection of school districts to look at suspension, expulsions, and criminalization, and how special education is working against our children rather than helping them? And the other issue is, what is your full understanding of the appointment of a deputy mayor of education? Those are two questions that I have, and I'll take the answers off the call.
The Community Affairs Committee, Council President, that's an area that is going to be looking at education. And with the deputy mayor of education, which council committee will have oversight over his activities?
I believe it will come back before Community Affairs. However, all the fiscal pieces will remain under admin and finance, that committee. The one thing that we discussed when looking at this position, and I believe I heard Councilor Brown say earlier, we were all in favor of a deputy mayor of education, but we thought this person would serve the entire community and not just focus on charter schools, looking at IPS, looking at the township school, and being a leader, if you will, in education.
The fact that this position also has an economic development quotient trying to bring other groups here, which doesn't really add jobs for Indianapolis if all you're doing is moving people from New York or Chicago or the South or the West Coast here, that's maybe great economic development for somebody renting out an office, but it doesn't help in terms of adding jobs.
Well, not ultimately, but we've got to look at a larger picture too. Mm-hmm. That education has got to be what, like Maggie was saying, is a larger picture than just charter schools. But the deputy mayor of anything, whether it's economic development or education, still is only going to be allowed to be as engaged in the community as the mayor allows them to be. And so when we're looking at how engaged they're going to be, that's where the buck stops.
A couple of things quickly. Obviously, there's been this hearing that's been going on this morning and early this afternoon at the State Fair, the results of the two investigations. And it becomes obvious that the state is going to have to tighten down its regulations for outdoor stages and to prevent the tragedy. But what also has come out in this report is that some of the same problems here at our State Fair occur in other states. Vernon Brown, we already have procedures in place to inspect stages and riggings anywhere in the city except on state-owned property. Will the council committee that oversights the Department of Code Enforcement be looking at the report to see whether we need to tighten our ordinances up to maybe meet some of the recommendations?
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Because of the Super Bowl, our Department of Code Enforcement did a tremendous job of all the temporary structures that were in downtown in place for the Super Bowl. They did daily inspections. They watched the weather channel and made sure that things were up to safety codes and if any problems were going to arise.
So we may be ahead of the curve, and maybe the governor and the state fair should look at what the city of Indianapolis and Marion County has been doing.
Our code enforcement people work closely with the state. The state kind of let them have the ball take the lead on the Super Bowl action, and they're working in conjunction with the state offices to work out a plan for code enforcement and for temporary structures.
Speaking,
we did a great job.
Speaking of Super Bowl, the Capital Improvement Board said they only lost $300,000, but we don't know the impact yet of the tax revenues from the hotel, motel, and rental car taxes. I know there had been a recommendation from the previous council that there should be some accounting of how much was being spent. Where are we on that process?
Well, I haven't seen it. Maybe Maggie's seen it.
You see?
All the information has not been gathered, and so I expect once they have that information, we'll have them come before admin and finance and give us a report.
All right, and the final, and we have now got an anti-smoking ordinance. We're doing fine on that, but we don't have the votes to override the recommendations of the modification on the police and fire merit, because the mayor's explanation of why he vetoed it, I've read that explanation 7 times, and I still don't understand it.
Nobody understands the name. It was a one-sentence veto that it didn't fit the objectives of the city. So I guess the mayor's objectives for the city of Indianapolis is not to be fair, not to be open, not to be transparent, and not to be impartial. So those must be his objectives right now.
All right, because it was a reasonable thing. You were at the proposal added not only some more members to the merit boards, but also added members representing police officers and firefighters.
Right. That initial proposal he vetoed a couple months ago. But this one made it on the appointing authority, the council, the mayor's office, and the FOP or the fire union, which made three.
How can you be against that?
Made three diverse appointing authorities and more closely mirrored the state model merit law, so it was legally defensible. So there was no legal objections to this. It was just some vague hocus pocus stuff that the mayor.
Maybe
made
he'll
up.
Address that in his State of the City speech that is coming up on Wednesday. We've asked the mayor's office to provide a spokesperson to come on our program on Wednesday in our first hour to kind of walk the community through the mayor's recommendations in his State of the City speech. We hope that they will be here in the first hour, because in the second hour, we're going to be talking to the Libertarian candidate for governor, Rupert Bonham. Now, if Rupert can come on, I'm sure someone from the administration can come on, because the Democrats are here. The majority is here. Everybody else is here. Guys, thanks very, very much.
Thank you, Council President Maggie Lewis,
the Majority Leader Vernon Brown, and at-large counselors Zach Adamson and John Barth.